7 o'clock. You're listening to CFRC 101.9 FM. We're broadcasting from Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario.
And Sean, you know, I was just looking over our notes for the rest of the show. And
for the folks that...
We only have an hour left.
For the folks that were listening to the other show?
Yeah.
Canonical? It refers to something that is accepted, authorized, and recognized as standard, orthodox, or authoritative with a specific field.
What?
Yeah, that's what I said. I thought it meant so much more, but no, that's all it means right there. So if it were like layman's terms, mm-hmm. It'd be authorized, accepted, official.
Okay. Official. Kind of like what the show is.
Standard, recognized. Official. We're recognized.
Oh.
We're recognized as being here for 30-some plus years.
Mm-hmm.
So like we're canonical. So if you were gone, we would not be canonical.
Oh. You would just be comical.
Maybe. I don't think I can be that. Anyway, so there you go. That's what canonical means. I thought the folks at home needed to hear that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why. But, you know, it's helpful.
Good. All right, we're going to take another look at a different.
We are
different group.
Somebody else.
Yeah, and this is a duo, and
there's two of them.
Yes, called Twin Flames, and I have a little bit for you.
Do they look alike?
Yahi and no, they're husband and wife team. Now, when I first met them, they were.
She married her brother.
No, they're two different people. I'll tell you in a second. Because Yahi is from Nunavut. I'm going to have to borrow your paper, I think. No, I don't have to. Where is he from? He's from Nunavik.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, which is on the Quebec side. And also from Ganawage.
So he's from there and Ganawage?
Yeah. Well, your parents from one community and one parent from another community.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So that's Yahi. And so he's an Inuk Mohawk singer-songwriter. And his voice is basically ancient stone.
Oh.
Well, at least that's what the thought is.
That's what
Chelsea
they like to
June
think.
Is his partner.
Chelsea June.
Yeah. And she's Algonquin Cree. And settler, sort of from the Ottawa Valley. Yeah.
Okay.
So that's a little background on them. But basically, we're going to take a look back. Basically, we're going to transcend the borders and the landscape. And we're going to bring you back into kind of seeing what the world's like. So the first song that I picked for you, basically, it's The Spark in the Stars.
Ooh.
Think of that one for a second.
I have.
Yeah, and this track's a beautiful nod to Chelsea June's Métis and settler heritage. And it's your favorite. It's sung in French, but the emotions are universal.
The emotions are English.
The song was born from a moment of looking upward and feeling the vastness of the universe. You've done that, right? Look up in the night sky?
Nightly.
Yeah. Well, no, when you were camping and at
every
nighttime,
time I drive home from here,
it's dark.
Yeah. I look up into the sky and I'm like, oh.
Anyway, so this song reflects the idea that we are all made of stardust.
Oh.
Connected by the same sky, regardless of the lines we draw on it.
All right. So... So we're going to begin with this French word.
Les étoiles.
See, now I would have said that wrong. I would have said that differently.
It's just the stars, basically. It's
in the quiet of the wilderness, stars aren't just lights. They are the ancestors. This song is a shimmering tribute to the French and indigenous threads that weave through their heritage. It's a reminder that even when we feel small, we are part of the cosmic tapestry. Written as a celebration of their bilingual roots, it reflects the beauty of looking up and seeing the same sky, no matter which language you use to name the constellations.
Dans les étoiles, à chaque nuit il te regarde, et même si tu pars ton chemin, n'oublie pas, il y a toujours demain. And I wish, and I wish, and I wish, and I wish again. And I wish, and I wish, and I win, I wish again. La da di da dum da dum, la di la di da dum da dum, la di la di da dum da dum, la di la di la di da dum. And I wish, and I wish, and I wish again. And I wish, and I wish, and I wish, and I wish again. I once whispered to a star, and I wish that dreams were not so far, and fairy tales would come true in the end. There'd be such thing as a real friend. And I wish, and I wish, and I wish, and I wish again. And I wish, and I wish, and I wish, and I wish again. Fais confiance en les étoiles, à chaque nuit ils te regardent, et même si tu pars ton chemin, n'oublie pas, il y a toujours demain.
Well, that's Les Étoiles by Chelsea, well, with Chelsea June, and he's playing his guitar. Did you know that?
What's that?
That there are two of them. They do all the music. Next song, we're going to do Echoes of the North.
Ooh.
So who do you think this is going to feature? Yahi.
Oh, okay, Yahi.
Anyway, so we're going to go from the stars, and we're going to drop down to the tundra. And this song is called Nunaga. Nunaga, it means the land in Inuktitut. And for Yahi, and he grew up in Nunavik, and then part of his life was in Ganawagi. But this song is visceral memory of the north, and it captures kind of the haunting sound of the Arctic, the silence, the wind, the spiritual connection to the earth. It's a song of belonging, and it was written to honor the resilience of the Inuit people and the unbreakable bond between a person and the place they call home.
So from the sky, we drop to the tundra.
Mm-hmm. We do.
Nununga.
I did that on purpose.
Nununga means my land. When Yahi sings, this is, you can feel that permafrost. I can feel the permafrost in here.
Well,
And you pull that Arctic, a pull of the Arctic. It is the love letter to the North, a place that is often misunderstood by the South, but remains a sanctuary for those who call it home.
Nunaga, ma terre. Je ferme mes yeux et je suis transportée. La neige qui tombe, le vent du nord. Étendue en dessous les aurores boréales, mon imagination se promène. Je retourne à ma terre, à ma communauté, à mes amis et ma famille. Je m'ennuie de ma terre, Nunaga.
Nunaga. It's a love love. C'est l'amour. Kovara Aneto Erkaya Zorosirnere Lautane Erkaivunga Ketsana Langito.
Hi, this is Chelsea.
And this is Yayi, and we are Twin Flames.
You're listening to our new single, Just Like a Ghost.
Could my hand watch me bleed? Jump through a photograph, make believe. You said I'm sorry when I needed it most. Show up in my dreams just like a ghost. Love is blind and love is pain.
Office of VP Research offers undergraduate students meaningful opportunities to engage in discovery-based learning and to develop research and presentation skills through their Undergraduate Student Summer Research Fellowship and the Undergraduate Student Research Award. Do you self-identify as a Black or Indigenous person? There are allocated funds through the USRA to help address the disproportionate underfunding of Black and Indigenous scholars at the undergraduate level. All projects are paid full-time work under the guidance of a faculty researcher and run from May through August. Application intake and deadlines are set by each department, so contact your department supervisor today. Application intake and deadlines are set by each department, so contact your department or supervisor today. Access the website to learn more, queensu.ca/VPR/resources/undergraduate. For general inquiries, contact Tracy Allen at allent@queensu.ca.
Friday evenings at 6 p.m. here on CFRC, listen to Saltwater Music, a show covering all musical genres from the East Coast of Canada. Celtic, of course, but also rock, jazz, blues, folk, and a lot more. I'm your host, Rob Carnell. Tune in to Saltwater Music Friday evening from 6 to 8 here on CFRC 101.9 FM. Or you can catch us on the web at www.cfrc.ca. And for our listeners out east, that's 7 p.m. Atlantic and 7:30 Newfoundland.
Na, 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 na. Your library, your story. At the Kingston Frontenac Public Library, books are just the beginning. A library card starts a lifelong adventure, connecting you to everything you need to inspire learning, creativity, and fun. With 16 locations and plenty of online services, using your library has never been easier. Study in a quiet space, meet friends and learn new things, or explore the world through a magazine or a museum pass. Become a part of our story. Visit your local library branch or find us online at kfpl.ca. Every day you hear something new on CFRC. Can you keep up? You need a weekly recap. Catch up with What's Climbing Friday mornings at 10. The charts on CFRC.
Special guest here at Aboriginal Voices is Lindsay Ritterkopf. And Lindsay, welcome back.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. It's always fun to chat with you about what kinds of things you're working on and where in the world you go and that sort of thing. And especially when you're talking about going outdoors and doing activities with children. So tell me a little bit, what have you done sort of in March this year?
Yeah, so most recently, we took our group of kindergarten students to the sugar bush that's near us in Niagara, and we were learning about how maple syrup is made, and of course, their favorite part was trying some maple syrup on the pancakes.
Oh,
so
nice.
That was also a nice little treat for them. Yeah, so the place near us, actually, they did a really good educational program. The kids got to go on a wagon ride into the sugar bush, and they started actually with the Anishinaabe story of how maple syrup was discovered. Oh. So we thought that was really interesting, and they actually had a camp sort of set up so that they could show the students how, you know, and a long time ago, the Indigenous peoples were hungry and they were looking for something that would be nourishment. And so one of the chiefs went out into the woods, put an axe in a tree, and happened to come upon this syrup leaking out of the tree.
Mm.
And then the trickster Nanabuzu, if I'm saying that correctly, came and added water. So then they had the sap that they then needed to boil. So they kind of had to work for it. And the story goes so that the humans wouldn't become lazy. And then they would have to work for the sweet treat. So then they actually showed us how Indigenous people would have taken the sap and put it into a hollowed out log and then had a fire going with some really big rocks that then when the rocks were hot enough, they would put it into the hollowed out log with the watery sap. And they would have to do that. And he said it would probably take about 7 days in order to actually get some of the syrup.
Oh, my goodness. That's
quite
a long time.
Lengthy process, but they did find that the benefits were great. It gave them energy at a time when, you know, they might be hungry and in that end of the winter days, tired, and that would be definitely a nice, sweet treat, I guess, to discover and work to create. And so then that's just the one telling that they did say that there are other Indigenous legends. One involves a squirrel, and another one just involves a man who broke a branch and then discovered the syrup in it. So there are different retellings based on the indigenous people that were in the area, but that was the one that was told to us. And so we thought that was really interesting, and the kids actually got to see how the water was boiling when you added those hot rocks to it. So it was a very hands-on experience for them to be able to witness firsthand. And so that was, I think, a really good way to show them that, you know, this is something that has been, discovered centuries ago. So.
Oh, that is fascinating, especially you're talking kindergarten children who are five, almost six now. Right?
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. Some of them are four. And then we continued on our path, and they brought us to another camp that was set up. And so they explained that this was how the pioneers would have done it. So the pioneers would have brought with them some cast iron pots and some tools and things like that. So then there was a fire going, and there were three really large pots, and they were of various sizes. So the one was extra large, and then medium, and then the smaller one was still quite large in size, but they explained how the sap would go into the biggest cauldron. And someone commented how it looked like a witch's cauldron, actually.
One of the kids?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they noticed that. And so they would boil it in that first large pot. And then they had a long-handled spoon that was quite large. And they would move over as it got thicker. They would move it into the middle pot, and then they would move the syrup into that final pot. And he did mention that the kids would have helped with jobs like that on the pioneer campsite and things like that, that they would have been involved in the chores. One of the interesting things that we learned at that station was, you know, because there would be ash or, you know, bits of bark or things like that that would get into the pot, and they wouldn't have wanted that in with the final product. They said, especially if they were going to be using it to trade or sell. So they wanted it to look clear and look appealing. So he said they would actually crack an egg, because they had their chickens, and so they would crack an egg on the top of the boiling now basically almost the syrup, and then that would be used to kind of gather up all those bits on the top or inside, so that they could make sure that it was clean. So that was another really interesting thing. And he did say, you know, they wouldn't want to waste it, so somebody would eat that fried egg.
Ah, nice. So, yeah. Well,
yeah.
So you have the time to, explore. Here's a different use for eggs.
Well, exactly. Exactly. So that was, that was kind of fascinating for them as well. Mm-hmm. So that was good for them to get to know, some of the different ways and really how much work goes into making 1 liter of maple syrup, really. It's a lot different now. We saw, the buckets that they use now, and then the processing machine, that it goes into. But they did get to see the man, putting the wood into the furnace to start the process for the processing of the maple syrup in the way that they do it today.
Right. And today, these days, it works faster than it did with the 7-day approach, you know, that goes into that. But still, it's a long time to make, to boil down from the sap, which is kind of sweet, but it's not really usable for us. But then it goes right through the whole process, so that's great for the kids to see and to taste at the end. Yeah,
exactly. Now, yeah, they said it's about 5 of their buckets of sap to create 1 liter of maple syrup. So they could really see visually too how much sap needs to be collected, and then, you know, how much is water, right? They said there's about 2% sugar in the sap, and then by the time they're done with the maple syrup, there's 67% sugar. So yes, no wonder they liked it so much.
And the other thing too, that I think back to your story at the beginning, was that the actual use of the maple syrup as a syrup, you know, it's liquid, but it's also for carrying or transporting around. It's not easy. But then if you wait long enough, it'll crystallize into little grains of sugar or blocks of sugar. So yeah. I don't know if that you carried that on, but that would be one that I would want to do at home to see how long will it take me to take this syrup that we have now and turn it into little blocks of usable sugar that's easier to carry if you're going to go from one place to the next. Yeah.
Good. Yeah, absolutely.
The other thing I thought about when you were telling me the story at the beginning was, did it give you a chance then to talk about the trees and the snow conditions at that time of the year? I don't know, like the observation part and discussion of those.
Yeah, they were talking about how, you know, it has to be a certain time of year where the sap is really flowing through the trees. And of course, it has to do with the temperatures and sort of coming to the near the end of the winter, but not quite spring. So it was March 9th that we were there, and I know that they continue on doing the tours and stuff like that for a few more weeks. So,
and it all depends on the temperature. Warm in the afternoon and cold, very cold. Well, not very cold. So the range is between -7 and +7. You know, with a range. That's a rough way to look at it. Another reason for those charts that we have, the calendars with the sunlight, the cloud, and maybe the temperatures could go with it, and we can see a change over time.
And I think the indigenous call it the maple moon, too. I was reading something about that as well.
I will check that.
Heard of that?
Well, there, yes. Yeah. A lot of times describing the moon has to do with what's happening on the land, strawberry moon coming up or wolf howl moon, and, you know, that's those kinds of things. Good. All right. Now, next step. What other ideas have you come up with to go outdoors and play that some of our listeners might want to try?
Yeah.
Not necessarily on the maple syrup part.
Right. But going along with another sweet treat, we actually did make ice cream with our kindergartens as well. So you can do that either outside or inside the classroom. We brought in some ingredients. And so we did, you need a couple of cups of whole milk or cream, and a cup of sugar, and then you put that in a bag. You can also put vanilla, that's optional. And then we got a large Ziploc bag, and we put ice in that so that it was about half full, and half a cup of salt. Then you put the smaller bag into the larger bag, and you can either roll it around on the table or shake it. And we were giving each of the kids at the table a churn to experience how they can actually help to make that cream really cold. And before their eyes, it's like a, you know, magical science experiment that it actually turns into ice cream. And so then, of course, they get to taste it. So that was pretty fun, too.
Yeah, mouth-watering.
Yes. And we had a student that actually tried it at home and just rolled the bag of cream and sugar around just in the snow at their house when we had quite a bit of snow, and it worked as well. So they had to have, I think, some salt as well, though, because that really helps to move the process along. But yeah,
that's,
you can do that outside
interesting.
Or inside.
Mm-hmm. So you had a student experience it at school with you.
Yes.
And then went home and wanted to recreate this. Yeah. Mom and dad have to be very ready for this idea.
Oh, yes. And mom actually works at our school as well. So, you know, when her daughter came home and wanted to try it, of course, you know, she was giving her some ideas. I did read that you could actually just mix a bunch of cream if you have some really fresh fall and snow. So that's another way that the kids could speed up the process, I guess.
Oh, very nice. Yeah. That's
just shake it up. Mm-hmm.
And since we still have lots of snow in the Kingston area, maybe I'll try that this afternoon before it gets too warm.
Yes, exactly. And I think I had mentioned on a previous episode about making the snow volcano. So if you still have snow, that's a fun one to do outside as well.
How do you do that?
So you just kind of make the shape of the volcano, hollow out the center. We did like a little cup, or you can use we used a water bottle before as well, like a recycled water bottle. And you put your vinegar. It's best if you do some food coloring in with the vinegar, and then we also did some dish soap, because then that really makes it go a lot further. And and then when you're ready, add some baking soda and away you go.
Okay, there's another one. If you add in blue, then you'll have blue snow on the top of the volcano.
Yeah, you can just see it better than when it's just the baking soda and vinegar. It's
Wow, that's excellent. You sent me a picture from, what is it? It looks like it's out in the woods. So is this something that you're planning to do, or you have done?
I haven't done it yet, but I saw this idea and I was intrigued. And so I think I'd like to, recreate that, where it looks like they're going to be practicing some measurement with some balances or buckets. And so looks like some simple materials needed. So a hanger, and then you get some buckets to attach on either side of the hanger with some string. And then underneath, we noticed there was a basket of things that the kids would naturally find outside in the woods. So some lighter and heavier objects. So we noticed there were some pine cones, some rocks, some sticks or wood pieces.
Yeah, the rocks shouldn't be heavy, heavy rocks, because you don't want to break your strings, right?
Yeah. Yes. Don't want to be the really, really large ones, but
These are like river rocks?
Fit in their hand. Yeah.
Yeah.
That would be good. So I think that would be something neat to try, an investigation And of course, we always like to bring that learning outdoors. So, you know, that's a good way to cover some mathematics.
So you could put in one rock and see how many pine cones or spruce cones take to equal that one rock.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We also compare and talk about which one is heavier, which one is lighter, things like that. But they always seem to make it a goal to try to balance whenever we work with bucket balances in the classroom.
Okay. You could also use different liquids, couldn't you? I wouldn't suggest that outdoors if using sticky liquids, but certainly if you're using water.
Yeah. Sometimes we bring out the watering cans with water or buckets of water. That always makes for some good exploration as well. In the spring, we can often find water outside with the melting of the snow and things.
Well, this is fascinating. And I'm just thinking about all the language that you could stimulate from just this little coat hanger and two plastic tub kind of holders, right? You'd have to get them ready. But they look like, in the picture, they look like about, you know, something you would buy sour cream in, or you could buy, I don't know, salads that you can get at the deli, right? They're just about 250 milliliter size rather than the 1 liter tub.
Yeah, I was even thinking like soup containers sometimes from takeout or things like that. We always ask families to send in, you know, recyclable materials and things like that, right? Because we use them for so many different things. We just built leprechaun traps just for the March break, actually. And so that's one of their requirements, that it has to be built with recycled materials. So, yeah.
Very good. Yeah. This idea that you have, I'm going to see what I can do about encouraging the folks in my little community to try out. I could set up something like that and then ask the kids, because, you know, the kids go by sometimes down the road and wave or stop to talk. And this would be a good opportunity just to gather a few of the items that we have around our yard, because we have spruce and we have pine, three different pines, and we have several different size spruce cones. So, you know, just the difference in sizes. And then my brain started to go into thinking about the cones and the seeds.
Right, yes.
And how many seeds would a squirrel need to last the winter? You know, and what type of seeds are they? So you're back to your measurement.
Yeah, and the kids definitely notice. You know, sometimes they'll ask me, like, what happened to this pine cone? Or why does this pine cone look like this, but the other one looks different? And so we talk about, you know, who might have been eating the pine cone and things like that. And, you know, we had already talked about some of the tracks that we see in the forest. So the kids are very aware of the kind of creatures that go through our outdoor classroom and those that might be snacking throughout the winter. So that's pretty neat for them to see.
That would be exciting. So now you've taken me from the tree and maple syrup to a little bit about using the balancing for balancing and information about balancing, and into now tree study and seeds, and then into tracks in the snow. Yeah, everybody going to have to race out before the snow melts away this winter in the forest.
And speaking of seeds, that reminds me of another activity that we did a few weeks ago. So we had a whole bunch of old coffee cream containers that were donated. And so we helped the kids to use scissors to cut out a square in the bottom, and sorry, not on the very bottom, but near the bottom of the container, to create like a little ledge in order to make a bird feeder. So then they could put the bird seed in, and we attached some yarn at the top, and then they can hang it up. So we did hang some up at school, but a lot of the kids wanted to take them home to hang up in a tree at home. So we gave them each a little baggie with some bird seed in it. And they were able to paint their, you know, coffee cream container so that it was more appealing and gave some bright colors and things like that. So they had a lot of fun with that. And yeah, teaching them that we can help nature, right, too, in the winter, to help the birds find some food and squirrels and things like that.
And it gives them an opportunity to observe outdoors at home rather than at the school. Yeah.
Exactly. And we've been talking too about how you really notice the birds coming back now that the temperatures are getting warmer. And we're hearing a lot of those bird noises when we're outside playing, and they weren't, you know, always there, right? For the winter, it was not as many. So they're definitely noticing the change as we're getting into spring.
Well, you brought up a whole lot of items there, Lindsay. Thank you very much for doing this with us. And I'm going to give the last word to you. You know, comments for parents who aren't in the school studying this with everybody like you are. And so the kids come home all excited about something. What kind of suggestions could you give to the parents for observations or reading or creating?
Yeah, so I think a lot of learning can stem from what the kids are interested in. So maybe they'll come home and tell you about something that they've learned at school or something that they've noticed, and then you can extend that learning at home. So there's lots of things that you can do. If it's something that you're not familiar with, you can do some research or look up some outdoor ideas. There's so many that I find online all the time. And then we give it a try. And sometimes it's something that the kids are really interested in, or sometimes maybe you think, oh, we thought they would have enjoyed that more. But there's often things that stem off of a little spark. And the other thing I wanted to say too was that the nature play and that outdoor learning, it doesn't have to be expensive, because you don't really need a lot of materials. You know, it's very simple materials that you can use to create some of these experiences, such as making that bucket balance, right? There's really only a few materials that would be needed. And like I said, you know, you can use recyclable materials for a lot of things too. But it's definitely important to have some tools. So for kindergarten, we get them little trowels and shovels and garden tools and things like that for in the spring, and bud catchers. In the winter, we just had a whole bunch of snow shovels for them to use and explore and build and create. So
wonderful ideas and good advice. Thank you, Lindsay Redekop from Ridgeway, Ontario. Appreciate all of this. Talk to you soon.
Thanks for having me.
Where do we go from here? The end is surely near. Where do you go, my dear, to mend your broken heart? Are you a slave, my friend? Are you the living dead? You can't change the world if you don't do your part. Come up, come up from the rubble. Come up from the ash.
gotta give it all you got.
I fell into your dreams, looked into the light in your eyes. I am watching you, floating across the evening sky, and I smile, start dancing. Oh, when I fell
can be unpredictable, but a little preparation can help keep your home safe and your utilities running smoothly. If you live in a house, be mindful of where you shovel snow. Keep fire hydrants visible so emergency crews can access them quickly. Avoid piling snow against gas meters or outdoor vents, as blocked vents can lead to dangerous carbon monoxide buildup. Be prepared for power outages. Keep flashlights and batteries handy, charge your devices in advance, and never use propane stoves, barbecues, or generators indoors. They can produce deadly carbon monoxide. And remember, our crews work in all kinds of weather to keep your utilities running. Help keep them safe by slowing down near work zones and giving them space to do their job. For more winter safety tips, visit utilitieskingston.com. Stay safe and stay prepared.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Revolving Door on CFRC 101.9 FM. Now, if you're new here, this is the show where I talk about one artist each week and sort of how influential they were to music overall. And this week, the band I'm deciding to do is My Chemical Romance. Now, My Chemical Romance are sort of the staple of what was given the title of emo music in the 2000s, similar to bands like Panic at the Disco and Fall Out Boy. And although My Chemical Romance kind of rejected the emo label, they couldn't really escape it, and that is sort of what they became in history. But they're really cool. I really like them. I was, I think, a late bloomer into getting into them. I didn't really get into them until probably end of high school, early university, when I know that most people, most of my friends were listening to them since like the sixth grade. So like, but another that, other than that, I can recognize how awesome they are and how great they are. I don't know too much about them, but a little bit of the history behind them is Gerard Way, who is the lead singer and then the lead songwriter. He was trying to be a cartoonist. He didn't really see music in his future, but he was trying to be a cartoonist, you know, make something substantial, make something that would change people's lives and have an impact on people. And he was really into music as a kid, and music very much impacted him and his art. And the story goes is he was in New York City meeting with Cartoon Network, the television network, to try and pitch an animated show of his that he had created. And he just happened to be in New York City at the time and place of the September 11th attacks, and he witnessed one of the planes crashing. And that was a very profound moment for him, where he kind of was like, okay, like, I need to do something. I need to do something that is going to actually make a difference and make an impact. I need to just risk it all and do something. And to him, that was music, and that was My Chemical Romance. So he did that. He, along with Ray Toro, I forget their original drummer's name, and then his brother, Mikey Way, decided to start this band. And then Frank Iero joined as a rhythm guitarist later on. And they started this band, citing Iron Maiden and the Misfits as some of their key influences. And the name, My Chemical Romance, came from, I think Mikey Way and Gerard Way both worked at a Barnes & Noble, and one day they were putting books away and they were shelving this book about rehab and everything, and it was called My Chemical Romance, and it was about sort of being addicted to pills, and they really liked that, so that's what they chose. But yeah, just a little spiel into them. Again, I think they're really great, and it's kind of cool how they started. I mean, really tragic how they started, but cool nonetheless.